We made this.
Hello, everybody. Carl here. As you'll know by now, we're currently rerunning some old episodes of the X-Cast to give you something to listen to whilst you wait for our Season 7 coverage, which gets underway soon. Well, this week it's my turn to choose, and I've selected an episode that first aired in October 2018, in which host Sarah Blair was joined by Amy Walker. The X-File they were discussing on this occasion was Avatar, an episode which shines a spotlight on Sarah's favourite character. You know, since the invention of the mirror, men all over the world have been worried about losing their hair. Julius Caesar, for example, was known to have been particularly concerned about his impending baldness. Whilst many believed that he wore a wreath of laurels on his head to signify that he was a powerful, strong leader, I'm inclined to believe those who say that in actual fact he was attempting to cover up the onset of alopecia. Indeed, by the time Caesar met Cleopatra, he was almost completely bald, and the rest, as they say, is history. And think of all the other notable figures who have been follically challenged. Socrates, William Shakespeare, Charles Darwin, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and last but not least, assistant director Walter Skinner. You know, I once asked Sarah what exactly it is that she loves so much about Skinner. Unfortunately, I couldn't make out what she was saying because she was drooling, so I've been doing some independent research to try and figure it out. And apparently there's a broader trend at play here. According to a BBC article, it's believed that baldness may be the human equivalent of a peacock's brightly coloured tail. And according to thebaldcompany.com, an overwhelming amount of studies have shown that the older a woman gets, the more they desire bald men. So perhaps that explains why Sarah's devotion to Skinner is getting even more intense with each passing year. I mean, after all, she won't mind me telling you that she is in the category of what has come to be known as the geriatric millennial. Or, alternatively, it could just be that she is responding to a compelling character who's always wonderfully played by Mitch Pileggi. In any case, I thought it'd be nice to revisit this episode of the X-Cast because it's always fun to hear Sarah speaking about Skinner. Hope you all enjoy it.
Host Sarah Blair, here to talk about Season 3's Avatar with our contributor, Amy Walker. Hi, Amy. Welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back.
It's been a while since we've chatted. I think the last time we did an episode together was for the pod watch, right? It's been a while.
Yeah, quite a while. But it's good to be back, and good to be back for a really fun episode with you as well.
Yes. I'm glad that you like this episode as much as I do. Okay, today we're talking about Avatar. This is the 21st episode of Season 3, and it originally aired on April 26th, 1996. And the story is by David Duchovny and Howard Gordon, and the teleplay is by Howard Gordon. And it was directed by James Charleston. So the name of the episode actually comes from a Sanskrit word, meaning a form taken by a deity to walk among humans. So overall, I mean, we all know the IMDb rating has kind of skewed a little bit. Out of 2,335 votes, it got a 7.9. So pretty high. Decent.
Good score.
Yeah. So what do you think? What would you rate this episode, Amy, on from 1 to 10?
Probably about the same. I was going to say 8, so... Yeah, pretty much what I was going to give it. I just think it's a strong episode. It's a really good episode that focuses on Skinner, but it's not one of the all-time greats of the X-Files, but it's always going to be one of the ones I look forward to on a rewatch, so a strong 8, I think.
Yeah. I think I would give it... Well, see, I have to... It's hard for me to separate because I've got, like, my Skinner love, and for that it gets, like, a 50. But as far as, like, actual being critical about it, and if I, like, try to step back a little bit, I feel like there's so much potential that is, like, untapped in this episode. So I would have to say it's 7, 7.5-ish, just because... I wish that they had kind of fleshed out a little bit more, I guess, but we'll talk about that. Overall, critically, it's like a really good underrated episode.
Yeah, they do pack a lot into a short runtime, so it feels a bit rushed in places, yeah.
Overall, it's a pretty good episode. And I kind of, I don't know, would you, I don't think this is technically a mythology episode, but it kind of is, I guess. I mean, I suppose it could be.
It kind of builds into Skinner's mythology and kind of builds up his character, not just like him personally with his wife and stuff, but his connection to the paranormal. And because he mentions again his near-death experience in Vietnam, and it kind of just adds more depth to him. So it kind of builds him up to that point where once he's fully on board and siding with Mulder and Scully, it's a lot more believable, because it's like, oh yeah, he's had these experiences. It's not just out of the blue.
Yeah. And I think, like, this is part of the untapped part, is that there's, like, this whole conspiracy to, like, bring Skinner down because of Mulder and Scully and their work on the X-Files. And I think that's where it kind of gets into the mythology, or edges it a little bit. I can't wait to talk about all that stuff. Do you want to dig in and get started on the breakdown?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay, I'm so excited. Okay, let's do this. So, first of all, we've got the best teaser in all of X-Files, like any episodes, my favorite teaser, because, well, we'll get to it. The first scene is we've got Skinner, and he is getting a divorce. Like, we don't even know that he's married. He never talks about his wife, and here he is, like, hang on, what? You hear the brakes screech to a halt. And his lawyer is Tasha Sims, and she played Ellen Reardon on Eve, and she played Laura Kelly in Excelsis Day. So she is kind of one of the little, the regulars that shows up here and there. And I love the line. I promise I'm going to try not to gush too much. I'm so sorry. I get all fangirly. But where he goes, don't lawyer me, Jane. I love that line. Anyways, so he doesn't sign the divorce papers. And then, like, what did you think when you watched? You were like, Skinner, what is going on? Like, it's a total surprise, right?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's the first time we've had any sort of hint to his personal life. And it's not like he's happy with the divorce. It's not, doesn't seem to be he's getting out of a marriage which has really bothered him. I mean, he looks really upset by it. And it's like the first insight into his personal life. And you just feel really bad for the guy. And it's kind of sad and upsetting in some ways.
It is. Yeah, it's like Papa Skinner, and you don't want him to be sad. Like, it's like this huge dump. Hey, guess what? Skinner's married, and he's also getting a divorce, and. So yeah, it's kind of a big thing. So he decides to not sign the papers, and we find out he's been married for 17 years, and has never mentioned his wife to Mulder or Scully. So I guess you can kind of figure what kind of marriage that's been. Like, he's definitely the kind of guy to keep work and personal separate.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So, he ends up going to this bar, and a girl comes and picks him up, and sexy times. They get it on, and this crazy thing happens with this old woman, and she's like, is she trying to kill him, or, like, what's going on? We don't know. And then he wakes up, and the girl has had her neck broken that he's been sleeping with. That's our teaser. And then we get the credits. And did you imagine even for a second that he killed that girl?
No. It's so far out of character for him, even when later on they present possibilities of, oh, well, he's got this going on and that could explain it. I was just like, nah. Just don't even entertain those ideas. There's no way it happened.
Right. I kind of feel like we're all Mulder in this episode.
Yeah.
He, like, knows from the beginning, like, something crazy is going on with Skinner. And this is not right. This is not normal, you know. And he is on the case, ready to go and defend Walter Skinner.
It's like, even if Skinner did do it, the woman's head was twisted all the way around. And it's like, there's no way he did that and didn't realize he did that. That takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's breaking somebody's neck, and then there's, like, really making a point. And, you know, like, you can crack somebody's neck and kill them and break their neck and still leave their head facing the proper direction. But that was excessive, I think.
Yeah, that was someone really making sure she was dead.
Right, exactly. That was, you know, we are here to send a message. So he wakes up and he's totally freaked out. Like, who wouldn't be if you wake up with that in your bed? You know, but he's acting really weird. Like, he's not defending himself. He's refusing a polygraph test. Mulder is like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why he's being so weird about this, but something's happening. So he gets Scully on the phone and he asks her to meet him at the morgue so that they can do the autopsy on this girl. So Mulder and Scully get to the autopsy scene and they start talking about all the stuff. And Scully had discovered that sex had happened because there was latex irritation. And let's get specific here. Hey, yeah, Skinner, he has sex. Who knew?
Yeah, it was like one of those moments of finding out a family member that's older than you has sex. It's like, no, it's wrong. It's like, it's Skinner. Exactly. He can't have sex. He's not a real person. Right. He's an adult.
That's what I wrote in my notes. I was like, Papa Skinner is a sexual being. Revelation. I can only imagine how Mulder and Scully, like, I appreciate that they handled it in a discreet manner. Like, they were, you know, they were cool about it. It had to be awkward. Then Mulder heads out and Scully's going to meet him, but then she turns the lights off in the autopsy room and sees some interesting glowing stuff on the body. That's interesting. And we get the hint that this is something supernatural going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How did you feel about, like, the supernatural aspect versus the actual real life aspect of how Skinner is being set up and all that? Because, like, I feel like there was almost two different storylines going on through this whole thing, which is why I kind of gave it a little bit of a lower point at the beginning. But do you think they should have just stuck with one through line, or do you think that both work, or do you think it's, like, trying to cram too much in?
It's a hard one, because I think both ways would have really worked. Like, if they'd have gone down the route of Mulder thinks Skinner's being set up, but then that turns out to be not the case, but there's a supernatural explanation, I think it would have worked just as well. I kind of think it was maybe done to keep the audience on their toes, try and figure out, is this conspiracy or is this supernatural? But I liked the supernatural element, the old woman sort of succubus type spirit, which is very creepy, and there's a lot of, like, night hag mythology in real life and true life experiences about it, which made it very creepy and cool. So I did enjoy it, but yeah, I think maybe if they stuck to one, it could have been a bit better.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, because trying to cram both of those in just sort of took away, I think it could have been two separate episodes, really.
Yeah.
Because you get, like, all the, you still get, like, the personal stuff, and I love the stuff with Skinner and, you know, his experiences with the supernatural. And I think that's really valuable and informs his character for the rest of the series, because you need to know that stuff about him and know that he's open to that. And that's why, you know, he appreciates and champions Mulder and Scully so much, is because he really does believe in this. But then he knows that he can't put this stuff in official reports either.
Yeah.
So I appreciate his struggle with all that. And I think that's a really interesting topic. But I think as far as this particular episode goes, I really like the procedural aspect of him being framed for murder. Mm. And Mulder and Scully trying to investigate and figure out, you know, how this has been played out to set him up. You know, with that being said, they go to visit the, her name's Lorraine. And she, the girl that plays Lorraine, Janie Woods Morris, was actually in Shadows. also. So, anyways, so they go to visit her. She's the, I don't know, is it madam? Is that the right word? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
she's in charge of this escort service, and they, like, grill her about getting the name, and they finally reveal that the person who paid for the services was Walter Skinner, and it's like, dun-dun-dun! But everybody knows you don't use your credit card for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And especially Skinner knows better.
Yeah, kind of an obvious setup.
Right? So, right off the bat, we know he's not acting normally. He definitely would know to use cash for this transaction. So that's kind of our first clue. And then they go back to the office. Mulder and Scully go back and they have the "Who is Walter Skinner?" talk. And they're like, "Do we really know him?" This is definitely not the first time they've had this conversation. And it certainly won't be the last. But it's still fresh enough to where it hasn't gotten cliched yet at this point in the series.
Yeah, it's early enough that it doesn't sort of grate at all.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Mulder is like, "I believe him." Scully's like, "I want to believe him." She very unconvincingly says that she's not trying to convince herself. I felt like she could have been a little bit more emphatic about that. But, so maybe Gillian Anderson was just tired that day. I don't know.
It was towards the end of the season, so.
Yeah. So at least, you know, they go through this and we're like, I don't know, is he really a bad guy and we don't know the truth about him, or, you know, so they raise that question. And then we go to when Skinner is leaving the police station. He walks out, Mulder and Scully are magically there, and there's a big reveal. Mulder mentions that the dead woman was a sex worker, and Skinner doesn't know. So he's obviously surprised. Mm. So what did you think about that? Like, when you saw that reveal and all that?
Yeah, I'd have been more disappointed if Skinner had known, in that sense of, I don't think he was portrayed in the right sort of frame of mind to be using those services. I think he was more, he thought he found someone who he could get a little bit of escape from his troubles with. Like someone he actually had a slight connection with, you know, nothing deep, but a real person there. I think it was played a lot more that way. So I really believe that in that situation, if she'd have turned around and said, "Oh, I'm an escort, here's my prices," he'd have said, you know, "No thanks," because I don't think he was in the right frame of mind to use a sex worker's services.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I think that Mitch Pileggi played that really well. He was genuinely surprised.
Mm.
You know, he was just having a really hard time, and he just needed somebody to just take his mind off things. You know, I don't think that he necessarily, I mean, the divorce papers are ready and drawn up, and his marriage is clearly ready to be over. So I don't know that he necessarily would have considered it cheating per se, but I definitely agree that he was not like, want to have a good time, but no.
Yeah, I don't think it was a case of him wanting to get laid. I think it was just him needing comfort from another person.
Yeah, and as we will find out later, he would never seek it from his own wife. It's kind of like breaks my heart a little bit, poor Skinner.
Yeah.
He just needed some love. So while they're talking in the middle of the road, I don't know why they were in the middle of the road, but they were. He looks up and he sees this old woman that he saw in his earlier. He like runs across the street and almost gets hit by a car and goes after her trying to find her, and he grabs her and she turns around and it's his soon to be ex-wife, Sharon. So he just kind of like randomly walks away, like, once he sees that it's her, he's like, I cannot deal with this right now. I just have to get away. And Mulder and Scully are just like, okay, so who are you now? And this is where we meet his wife, Sharon, who is played by Jennifer Hetrick. I think she's really pretty. And I think they make a good couple. I don't know.
Yeah, the small moments you do have between them, it's believable, and they kind of look good together as well.
I could see them totally, you know, being together. I'd ship that.
They would have really pretty kids.
Right? Oh, too bad that never happens. Poor Skinner. Yeah, that would have been great. Mulder and Scully go in and they talk to Sharon, and she reveals some stuff. What did you think about their little chat?
I thought it was a good sort of insight into what he's like in his personal life, and I guess it's like a bleed back from being in the FBI and law enforcement, where they have to compartmentalize and shut things off, that it's kind of affected him as a person outside of his work. And even though he clearly doesn't want his marriage to go wrong and has feelings for his wife still, it's kind of unintentionally his fault towards why the marriage broke apart, and it's kind of sad.
It really is. Like, she talks about how they've sort of just become roommates and they're just going through the motions.
Mm.
And that's clearly not enough for her. She wants more out of the relationship. And she deserves more, but he is just, like, trying to survive. Which makes me so sad because, like, they both want to be together, but they just can't quite get on the same page, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is heartbreaking. It's so tragic. It makes me really sad for both of them. At least she had the guts to even ask for a divorce and to, like, you know, move on. I thought it was a really good scene for learning about who he actually is and getting that insight. And another thing she mentions that I think is really important is that Mulder's, like, one of the only people he ever talked about from work.
Yeah. It kind of makes you think, does he talk about weird paranormal stuff at home and how amazing Mulder is? And it's kind of a fun little insight into how much he kind of digs Mulder.
It probably would have made a big difference maybe if he had actually talked about his paranormal experiences with her. She probably would have appreciated that more and, you know, held on to that, and it might have brought them closer. I wonder who else he has told about his Vietnam experiences. We get him talking with Mulder a few times, but he never mentions it to Scully, right? Mm. Until, like, the very end in Kitten. And that's only because Mulder's there. You know, I wonder if he thinks it's more of, like, a manly thing to talk about, or I don't know.
It might be, but also, even at this stage, after everything she's been through, Scully's still quite the skeptic. So I imagine if he told her, she'd turn around and give him half a dozen different things it could have been other than an actual out-of-body experience. Whereas Mulder's just like, oh yeah, totally, cool, you had an out-of-body experience, I'm on board with that.
I believe you, man. Yeah. Like, sometimes when you're going through that kind of trauma, you just need somebody to believe you and to make you feel like you're not completely nuts.
Yeah, and Mulder's the ultimate person for that.
Right? Yeah. So maybe that is why he mentioned Mulder. Also, Mulder mentions that he does not think that Skinner killed that woman. Like, she asks him, Sharon asks him point blank, you know, do you think he killed him? And Mulder's like, no, I don't think he did. So at least we've got Mulder, you know, staying firm on that side.
Yeah.
Then they go into Skinner's office, and the Office of Professional Conduct is rummaging through all of his things. They mention that Mulder and Scully are summoned to a formal hearing to assess Skinner's ability to continue as assistant director. So this has nothing to do with, like, they make it clear that, like, the charges of, you know, him possibly murdering a woman are separate from this hearing.
Mm.
They're questioning, like, his mental capacity, I guess. Like, they don't say that outright, but I think that it's implied.
Yeah, it kind of comes across like they have an issue with the fact that he slept with a sex worker more than he may have murdered a woman. Kind of like, well,
exactly.
One's fine, but the other one brings embarrassment. It's like, it's really odd that they don't make more of a thing of, oh, he may have murdered someone.
Yeah, right. But I mean, I guess, like, it's the FBI, like, people get killed a lot, but I mean, this would have been flat out murder. It is interesting that they're like, well, we can't have him talking about any weird dreams or paranormal stuff. Heaven forbid. anything supernatural goes on in the FBI. And then we've got the guy that's in this scene, who plays Agent Bonacasey, is also in the pilot episode, and he's in 3. So we've got a lot of recurring characters in this episode.
Yeah, there's quite a few popping back up.
I know, it's crazy. So Mulder and Scully go and talk, and they're like, why is he doing this? What in the world? Like, he's doing literally everything wrong.
Yeah, he's just making himself look worse.
Yeah, he's an assistant director for the FBI. He should know better than this. But he's still, like, it's like he's playing right into their hands. Mm. So everything's up in the air, and it's, like, totally weird. But then Scully shows this video of a guy having sleep disorders, REM sleep behavior disorder is what she calls it. She has dug up these records, or I don't know. It's never, it's, what bothers me is like, not really clear how she obtained this information, whether she, like, talked to the doctors or got his charts or what. But I guess, like, her being a doctor probably would have facilitated that a little bit, I would think, because we have, like, privacy, medical privacy and all that.
It may have been something that was in the investigation as well. Maybe they brought it up as a reason why he might be unfit to be a deputy director, because, well, he's having sleep disorders and that will affect his work life kind of thing.
So we find out that he's been going to a sleep center and seeing a psychiatrist. Not just, like, a regular psychologist, but a full-on psychiatrist for this stuff. So he's in trouble, and nobody knows, because he didn't talk to anybody about it. Then Mulder brings up the succubus idea, and Scully is like, well, hey, there was this glowing stuff. And so they go and take a look at it, but it's gone. There's no analyzable substance in the sample. So that's, dare I say, spooky. Did you really think that it was from the supernatural aspect of this, or do you think that maybe somebody came in and wiped it off or cleaned the body as part of the setup?
I think at this point, because of everything else that's going on and how far it's going into the setup, the fact that it's gone, I think that someone came and did something to the body to get rid of evidence, and then when she phones the lab and gets the results, it's probably not the real results. They probably doctored that as well, and it's something from the actual killer, which... Yeah, it's a very conspiracy type thing to get even that far deep that you're altering lab results. It wouldn't be outside the realms of possibility.
Yeah. If it was the succubus, there would be, like, the remnants or whatever of that. And that just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. The fact that it was around the mouth and nose as well, it seems more like they drugged her so that they could then kill her. You know, it's not... If it was the succubus, you'd expect it to be, like, maybe, like, handprints all over the body and stuff like that, but it was just in the one place.
Yeah, and the fact that she had, like, no fingerprints on her body except for his.
Yeah.
Like, she would at least even touch her own body, so there would at least have been her fingerprints, but maybe those didn't count. I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it. But I thought it was weird. I know that whoever killed her would have definitely used gloves, so there would not be a trace of them on it, but... Anyways, that was interesting. So then Mulder comes up with a theory that Skinner is running from this stuff, not because he's afraid of being caught for killing this girl, but he doesn't know that he didn't do it. And that's what's freaking him out. Because, you know, he just woke up and he thinks that maybe, you know, he's been having these crazy dreams and all this stuff is going on. He's in the sleep center and maybe he finally thinks that he has broken and, you know, actually done something really horrible, which is tragic. I'm sad that he ever thought that about himself, but it makes sense, I think.
Yeah, he's not in the right frame of mind because he's going through his divorce and, you know, the suffering from the lack of sleep. It's, you know, I don't think it's a surprise or, no, coincidence that this is when they sort of decided to set him up for murder. It's when he's at his most weakest, and it's believable to others that he could do this, and even to himself he can start to doubt it. I think that's why it's happening now, is because he's just not mentally prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. It's like, way to kick a guy while he's down, people.
Yeah, big time.
Oh, man. Then we get him drinking alone. Oh, poor Scarab. This just, like, makes me feel all the feels. So, he's drinking alone. He's got his sleeves rolled up and his collar unbuttoned, and just have to throw that in there.
Really important details. So,
exactly. Then Sharon stops in to check on him, and she mentioned that they haven't been together in 8 months or so, and he's still got all of his boxes packed up and he's sleeping on the sofa. Poor Skinner. He's just so pitiful. And, like, that conversation that they have just, is, like, makes me feel so many feels. Because they love each other so much and they just can't make it work.
Mm. Yeah, the fact that he hasn't unpacked his boxes is why it kind of gives the impression that he's almost waiting for things to fix themselves. He doesn't want to unpack so he can go back to her. And it's really sad because it's like, his heart's breaking. Bless him.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Then Sharon says that she knows he needs comfort, but he'll never let her give it to him. And it's like that look on his face, you know, like if he does go, like if he lets her do that and lets her comfort him, it'll just completely destroy all of his walls and all of his carefully crafted defenses. And he'll just like be a puddle of mush and... He can't let that happen, and it's so sad because he really should. This is a great scene. It definitely reveals a lot about him, especially all the stuff that he doesn't say. It's just really sad.
Yeah, it really shows how good of an actor Mick Pileggi is because he does so much in that scene with so little dialogue, but you can see all the pain and the emotion.
Yes. Yeah, and just, like, having him... And he's, like, sleeping with the picture of their wedding, yeah. And... Oh, my heart.
When he had hair as well.
Yes. The one time we had to see what he looked like when he had hair. He falls asleep on the couch after she leaves, and then the police come and wake him up and say that she's been in an accident, and she was run off the road, and not only that, they think it was him. So, you know, obviously while he's asleep in his apartment, anybody could just walk up and, like, hijack his car and run her off the road and come and park it back, and you know, he would never know. So then we cut to the symbolism of the broken wedding photo. Oh no. So I appreciate the directing in this episode. It's really good, I think. Did you think it was effective?
Yeah, there's a lot of atmosphere in it. It's like I think I saw somewhere that it was scripted to be in heavy downpour throughout, and for an episode that doesn't have a great deal of, like, spooky supernatural elements to it, it's visually one of the most dark and depressing episodes I can think of, because it's almost always night and it's raining, and even when they're outside in the day it's grey and gloomy because of the storms. It's really well sort of thought out and put together like that.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed was when they go to talk to the lady who runs the escort service, and they show Mulder and Scully walking in, but they show the big awning over the building. And I was like, oh, foreshadowing. I thought that was really good, using the establishing shots to kind of tie everything in. It was really solid. So then the police take Skinner down to the station. This is where we have the big talk with Mulder, where Skinner, he has no idea what's going on. And I love that part where he almost starts to yell. He's like, do you know if I had any idea what was going on? Like, you can tell he's like super frustrated with all this. And he, like, almost breaks and, like, actually shows some real feelings for once. But he reins it in. My stoic Skinner, he pulls it back and gets a hold of himself. And then he mentions his time in Vietnam. And he tells Mulder that he first saw this creepy succubus lady there. And she helped him. I love the line where he goes, I was no choir boy. I inhaled. Remember back in the 90s when, like, inhaling was the, like, big thing? It was like, you could smoke pot as long as you don't inhale.
Yeah. It's a bit of a dated reference, but it's a good, mm-hmm. good line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Mulder mentions he thinks this old woman is trying to possibly protect him, but Skinner's like, protect me from what? And we realize, like, he seriously has no idea what's happening right now. He doesn't know that he's being framed. He doesn't know why these people are coming after him or anything like that. I kind of have a little bit of a problem with this because, like, as much as I love that he's vulnerable about it and that he's like, I don't know what's happening to me right now, and he's on the verge of going nutters about this, but at the same time I feel like he would know. Like, he would be smart enough to realize something is off here and these people are after me because of Mulder and Scully and because of the X-Files, and you know, Mulder figures it out, but maybe I can just chalk it up to him being upset about his personal life and his wife and stuff, that he's just not thinking clearly at all.
I think if this was happening before his divorce or way after it, once he's sort of come to terms with it emotionally, he'd be much more sort of, okay, they're after me, we're going to get these guys, let's figure this out, sort of more on the offensive. But I think it's just because of when it's happening, he's just so messed up that he just can't see the wood for the trees.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Sharon's doing a number on him. Poor Skinner. Mulder gets an idea to go examine Skinner's car that had run her off the road. She's in the hospital. And he takes the airbag off of the car, which, okay, I don't know if you've ever been in a car wreck, but here's the deal. I was in a very bad wreck one time, and the airbag went off, and it punches you in the face, and holy buckets, like, it's intense. It's, like, literally getting punched in the face.
Ow.
The stuff is, like, so powerful. So I had, like, a fat lip, like, my nose was bruised. It wasn't broken, but it was definitely bruised. Like, my eyes were a little bit black. Like, if Skinner was in that car when the airbag went off, he would have had some marks or something on his face. I had like a rash on the side of my face from where it had burn and stuff. Like, there would have been evidence that he was in a wreck if that airbag had gone off. It's like pretty intense. So that kind of irritated me because like there's no way he could have been, you know, punched like that.
Yeah, kind of surprising they didn't think about that and sort of do something to him.
Yeah, so it would have made more sense if they had, like, come and beat him up first.
Yeah, drug him punch him in the face.
and then send in the police. But yeah, anyways. But I guess, I don't know, Skinner's, like, super tough. Maybe he just, you know.
He's got Wolverine healing.
Exactly. So then Mulder goes to Pendril. I love Pendril so much. Sweet Pendril. I think this is like his fourth episode that he was in. Brendan Beiser. And he uses his airbag to get a magical face print that is not Skinner. Dun, dun, dun. Because Pendril's the best. Do you love Pendril?
It's always good to see him turn up.
Right?
And
except in that last episode.
Yeah. that wasn't good.
So tragic. No. But, yeah, I love Pendril. He's so adorable. I just want to smoosh his face. And he's so in love with Scully.
Yeah, I just love the energy he brings to it. The just nice guy, always willing to help them out. It's nice for a world where almost everyone else is out for them.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Him and Chuck Burks, they were my buddies. Yeah, those two. I love how they get excited about stuff. So nerdy and adorable. So anyways, then we've got Scully at the hearing. And of course, Mulder's not shown up like usual. I mean, he's like being useful, but really, they could have like used him in the hearing. But I guess, I don't know, do you think it's better that he didn't come to the hearing? Because he would have gotten all like, the truth is out there. And
yeah, he probably would have done more bad than good.
Right. So Scully, like, does her best to stick it to the man, but it's no use, and Skinner loses his job. And Mulder finally comes up with a theory that it's because of the X-Files, and that, you know, earlier in the season, they shot Skinner, and that didn't work. He survived, because obviously he's amazing. And try again would be too obvious. So they're trying to get rid of him another way. Because if they can't get rid of Mulder and Scully, they gotta get rid of Skinner. But that doesn't work either. Because I know I read that there was a scene where they had the smoking man telling Skinner about this. So, and like why it was happening and all that. I think that would have been really useful to keep in, but I think they cut it for time, which is sad.
Hmm. That would have been nice to see. And
yeah, right?
Especially with the way their relationship between Skinner and the smoking man shifts over the course of the show, how it, at the beginning, they seem to almost be working together and a begrudging, like, I have to accept that you're always in my office smoking, to downright, hey Mulder, we should try and take this guy out, kind of change.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see a moment where he admits, it's like, oh yeah, we tried to destroy your life, just to push him more into the hating him sort of area, rather than just putting up with the guy.
I think that would have been a really valuable scene. I wonder if it's out there online somewhere, because I'd really like to see it.
Yeah. Plus, those two are just great in scenes together as well.
Yes, right? It's a pity. So we'll have to try to track that down. X-Files fans, if you know where this scene is online, send it to me now. Please and thank you. Okay, after that, the Mulder and Scully go and they find that the madam of the escort service has been thrown from the building. And she is smashed onto the glass overhang. So now we know that they're at the point where they're cleaning up and covering their tracks. So they see one of the escort girls and they get her to call up this guy who she kind of knows and have her say that she wants to meet him at this hotel. And dun, dun, dun! Excellent directing. The camera pulls back and we see that he is right outside the diner watching Mulder and Scully do this.
It's, oh, I can't believe Mulder and Scully did it in not only a public place, but in front of a huge window as well. It's such a rookie move.
Right? Oh, yeah. That one, yeah. That was like, oh, guys, please. You know better than this. Now they're acting crazy because Papa Skinner is like, in trouble, and they're not acting in their right minds either. Daddy Skinner's having a divorce and the kids are going crazy, so anyway. So I guess Skinner gets released from his interrogation at the police office, and he goes to see Sharon in the hospital, and he is so in love with her, and he just wants to tell her all the things, and it's so sweet and so many feels. Sorry for gushing. But I think it's really cool that, you know, like, he loves his work so much, and he believes in his work so much, but he really loves his wife, too, and he just can't manage both, and it's really sad. It, like, makes my heart clench when he says, the thing that really got me through each day was knowing that I'd be sleeping next to you that night, and that I had a reason to wake up in the morning. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's, like, really intense, right?
Yeah. It just makes it so much worse, because it's a marriage that it should work. They, all the scenes they're in together, they clearly both care about each other. It's just they can't make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I feel like the tagline for this episode is, it's so sad and poor Skinner, but it really is so sad.
It really is. I just have, like, in my notes, I just have feels written all the way across the page. Oh, man. Like, this is, like, that scene there is what I wanted so much more of. Mm. Even not just in this episode, but throughout the rest of the series. I think Skinner really deserved that much. Because, you know, especially because Mitch Pileggi is such a great actor.
Yeah.
He nails it so good. He just really deserves some more meat in his role. But anyways, he kisses her on the forehead, and it's so sweet, and then he pulls back, and it's the old woman, and her blood pressure is either rising or dropping. I don't know. Something, alarms go off and things happen, and he runs to get the nurse. And he comes back, and it's Sharon again. She says, listen to me. And she tells him something, but we don't see it. So what do you think she said?
I think she, I don't know. I think the fact that by the end of the episode they're still divorced and she doesn't say anything like I love you on camera, I think it can't be anything to do with their relationship. It's got to be somehow connected to the conspiracy, because otherwise the end would have to be different. They wouldn't get divorced or just show her saying that she loves him still.
Yeah. Well, but do they get divorced, though? He never signed the papers, and he put his ring back on at the end.
True. I kind of saw...
Or you at least never saw him sign the papers.
Yeah, I suppose they could still be married, but when he sort of takes the ring out of the packet and puts it back on, I saw that as they divorced, but he wasn't ready to let go yet, kind of putting the ring back on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I could see that.
I could be wrong. They could still be together. It'd be nice if they are, because then he's got a nice, happy ending.
Yeah. I think she says something to do with getting him to the hotel.
Mm.
Somehow, I don't know how, but I think that that's how he knows to go to the hotel.
Yeah.
And, like, in my own tragic reality, I'd love to believe that she says, listen to me, I love you, and you're the greatest, and then she dies.
Oh, that's so dark.
Wouldn't that be horrible? And then we don't know it, and then he puts on the ring at the end.
Oh, so he just gets widowed. Oh, that is so harsh. If that's what happened, I'm glad we didn't see that.
I know. But there's a fanfic out there, I'm sure. And if not, I'm going to write it, because I love to torture my characters. Not that Skinner is my character. Sorry, Chris Carter. He does not belong to me. He's yours. I just mean in general. Generally speaking. Anyways. Mulder and Scully have this sting operation set up at the hotel. And the bad guy sneaks upstairs past Mulder. He misses him. Scully is on a phone. She hears something. And she tells Mulder, hurry, get up here. And everything happens all crazy. Scully gets knocked out behind the wall. And then you hear some gunshots. Mulder's running down the hall. And who shot the bad guy except Walter Sergei Skinner? And he saved the ladies. My favorite part is when the police officer, the detective investigating his whole case, he comes up behind Skinner. Skinner's still holding the gun. Skinner turns around and he just looks at him. And the guy just nods. Like, you're good. It's all good now. You got the bad guy. It's cool. We're cool now. All charges drops. Like, with just a nod. It's like such a manly man thing to do. But yeah.
It could also be, okay, he's just killed someone who's holding a gun. Play it cool. Play it cool.
Yeah. Then we've got Mulder and Scully in Skinner's office, and they give him a report, and still nobody knows anything about anything because it's the X-Files.
Never a straight answer.
Exactly. So then, yeah, Mulder does ask him to fill in the line about how he knew how to be at the hotel. And it's like this scene. How did you feel about the scene? Because it made me feel like Mulder is... like this poor boy who just wants love from his daddy, and Skinner just won't give it to him.
Yeah, it kind of struck me as, I think from Mulder's point of view, it's, oh, well, you know, I was there for you through this, we've been through a lot, you know, give me something. But Skinner's like, no, I'm back at work now, it's, you know, you get nothing.
Yes.
I'm in work mode.
Exactly.
Go away.
Exactly. It's infuriating. He's like, and it's like he's got that one moment of hesitation where he's like, dare I say it? But then he's like, nope, never mind. And he like shuts down the wall, like closes all of his, you know, it's like, oh, Skinner, just tell him. So sad. That's even more tragedy of this episode. So, yeah, and then he gets the wedding ring out. Like, okay, what I want to know is, why does he have his wedding ring in an envelope at his work drawer? Like, that all these people have just gone through. I thought that was a little bit weird.
Unless the... because you see the engraving inside. Maybe that is new. Maybe she had that engraved in his ring and then delivered back to him.
But it was in the back of his drawer.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. It's a nice moment seeing him put the ring back on and being able to take away what you want from it. But yeah, it kind of you think he would have had it on anyway.
Unless she's dead.
Yeah, unless she's dead.
Oh. I'm going to stick with that theory because it's the most heartwarming. But yeah, like, yeah, that was one thing. I mean, where else is he going to keep it, though? I mean, I guess the FBI is the most secure place it could possibly be. Except maybe it's not like he's going to specifically go and, like, get it out of a lockbox somewhere.
Would it have been confiscated when he got arrested, maybe? Because they took him in for questioning for the car crash, which, well, the intentional car ramming. So maybe they would have taken his stuff and that would have included his wedding ring, but then would he have had to have been formally charged? And if so, he wouldn't have been out on the street. I don't know.
You know what I think? I think it was way easier to put it there than to, like, add another location.
Yeah.
And more set a new setup. Like, they've got the setup there. We're just going to blame it on filmmaking problems.
Yeah.
And leave it that, I think, because that makes the most sense. They wouldn't have to do a whole new lighting setup, whole new location, none of that. I think it's just easy peasy. Put it in the drawer. It's fine. Overall, we've kind of discussed this a little bit, but in our reader mailbag on Facebook from our X-Files basement group, pretty much everybody who made any comment about this episode wanted to know what happened to Sharon, which we've kind of covered a little bit. So we've got Clara Cook, Adam Silva, Dan Gear, Billy Reed. They all had speculations about that. So what do you think? We're gonna go with she died and that was it, and he was heartbroken and he just put the ring back on? Or did they get divorced? Did they stay married for a little while?
I think it's gotta be either. My initial reaction was they got divorced and then he put the ring back on because he wasn't ready to move on. But then your idea that she died is like, that would make sense as well. I think they're the most two likely. I don't see this event bringing them back together enough so that they could work out all their issues and stay married. As much as I want that for them, I don't think that's the likely outcome at all.
Yeah. What if they tried and then they were just like, no. And then maybe he decided, what if he decided that he loved her so much he had to let her go?
Yeah.
And he just set her free, like a bird. And she went off and lived her life. Found a nice man who was not a cop or an FBI agent. Maybe he owned a bookshop. I could see her marrying a bookshop guy.
I could kind of see Skinner retiring to run a bookshop. Wearing jumpers all day. Drinking tea.
Oh, now I have to write that fanfic.
He refuses to have any paranormal books in the shop, though.
And then after he set her free, he married his secretary. Because in season 10, he definitely has the wedding ring on. Thanks to Mitch Pileggi for forgetting to take off his string. From when he actually married his secretary on the show. Yeah, so I think that about sums it up, don't you think? What are your final thoughts? Do you feel like your rating changed at all, or you still settled it?
No, I still think 8's good because it's not perfect. There's a lot of things that could have been done better, and maybe the whole succubus storyline and seeing this woman for years could have been done as a separate episode for him, and that would have been great as well. It's a good Skinner episode, but it's not brilliant, and it could have been with a few tweaks, I think, because the basis for the story is really good and it's got some fantastic character moments, but like you said, some of the pacing and the amount of stuff they try and cram in lets it down a little.
Yeah. Do you like this one better than Kitten?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree. I
think Avatar is one of my favorite Skinner episodes, because all the Skinner-centric ones are some of my favorites. But I think this is maybe the best one they did.
Yeah. I think it has to do with his feels. And there's just so much. I think that he was given to work with, and he totally knocked it out of the park.
Mm.
I really like that aspect of it. Do you think it had a lot to do with, you know, David Duchovny being involved in the story for it? I like when he's involved in the mythology episodes, even if he doesn't actually write them, but he works on the story with it, because I feel like those are a lot stronger.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, the episodes Duchovny helps out on tend to be quite good, so it doesn't surprise me that the Skinner episode I like the most has a lot of Duchovny involvement in it.
Yeah. You know, Mulder really champions him in this episode.
Yeah.
I just wish they could have, like, moved on knowing all of this stuff about him that they discover about his personal life. I wish they could have, like, not been so cliche about it the rest of the time. Like, should we trust him? Should we not trust him? This, like, the waffling back and forth just got really old.
Yeah.
Really fast after this.
Yeah, it's like...
I mean, I think it's...
They learn a lot about him as a person in this episode, plus the fact that they try to set him up for murder and destroy his career kind of... It shows that he's definitely not with the bad guys, because otherwise why'd they do this to him? It's like, yeah, you should really trust him after this episode.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. This is not one that I used to watch a lot, but has definitely grown in my esteem over the years. So I love that I've got this episode followed by Quagmire.
Nice.
Can't wait to talk about that one. Yep. That one's coming up too. My favorite episode of all time. So, and this, and then plus after that, you've got Wet Wired, which is a really good episode too. So it's a pretty strong ending to season 3, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Amy, we sure appreciate you joining us today. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on a few social media outlets. My Twitter is @amazing_Amy_W. I also have my own podcast as well, which is Eccentric Earth. I'm there every week. It's a history podcast where I get guests on and tell them weird and wonderful stories from history that they have no idea what it's going to be. So that's a lot of fun. So yeah, I'm sure you can find me in one of those places. So come and check me out.
Awesome. Guys, definitely check out Amy's podcast. So I'm Sarah Blair. I'm on Twitter at Sarah, SarahBlair. And I hang out in the X-Files basement group quite a bit, so you can find me there. Thanks for joining us on this episode, Avatar Skintastic. Until next time, everyone. Trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group X-Files Basement and X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXCast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXCast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at @IAmWillAYE.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
The Movie Palace.
Yeah, I can remember my first viewing of The Sound of Music quite distinctly, actually, because it was 8 days ago.
You've never seen it before, that?
8 days ago was the first time I'd sat down to watch it from start to finish. Now, I always associate The Sound of Music... It's interesting that you both talk about it as an Easter thing. It is associated with bank holidays here, but I don't think it's just Easter. So I had seen a lot of these sequences I think if I was inside on a bank holiday when I was a child and the Sound of Music was on, it was normally a bad thing because it meant it was raining and I couldn't go out and play football.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
I've got 5 tattoos. So I started getting tattoos when I was about 5 years ago, and it was just sort of one by one, I guess. So not huge coverage, but I'm definitely got the bug, so to speak. So, but the latest one is the Red Dwarf one, yeah.
And that's the one you've decided to talk about today. Describe it for me.
Yeah.
Free with this month's issue.
Obviously, you must remember the sign in musical exchanges.
I do indeed.
Do not play. Yeah. But there was a few riffs, weren't there, that you weren't allowed to play? This being top of them.
Enter Sandman, Smoke on the Water, Stairway to Heaven, anything widdly above the 12th fret, I think that song said.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that paid no attention to that shit. Remember when we almost got thrown out for playing with that delay pedal?
Yes.
Amazing.
I also remember the day that I went in with my birthday money to musical exchanges to buy a pedal, and I ended up buying the Boss Hyper Metal, and I was insisting to the bloke that I was buying it from. I was like, I don't really play much metal, I just like the sound of it. I want to use it for sort of, you know, more experimental sounds. Like, you're wearing a Metallica t-shirt.
I'm not that into metal, actually.
I want to do something more like Swans with it, like My Bloody Valentine, that kind of thing.
Which I did, but I was wearing a Metallica t-shirt at the time.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.